I recently returned from a trip to Germany. On that trip, I happened to learn something about peace between nations. You're listening to Longitude. It's Friday, September 22nd, 2006. I'm Darris McNeely. On this recent trip to Germany, I was accompanied by Paul Kiefer, who is one of our writers for World News and Prophecy and lives near Bonn in Germany. Paul took me to Berlin, and we spent 3 days touring the capital of modern Germany. On one of the days, we went to one of the suburbs of Berlin, to the city of Potsdam. One of our purposes in Potsdam was to visit a house, a very special house. It was the house that had hosted the conference in 1945 at the conclusion of World War II, the last of the big three powers. The house was a home that had belonged to the former Crown Prince of Germany, the son of Kaiser Wilhelm II, who was responsible for World War I. The place was called the Seelenhof. It was his summer home. And it's interesting to visit a place like that all these years later now, more than 60 years later. The house basically is just as it was at that time in the summer of 1945, even down to the type of flowers that are planted out front. The Russians in 1945 had planted a big red star made of red geraniums out in the front courtyard of the house. And to this day, they maintain that motif there in the flower garden. You see the big red bright star that is a symbol and was a symbol of the former Soviet Union, today made out of geraniums. And when we were there here a few weeks ago, they were still blooming quite nicely. But the Seelenhof was the home of the Crown Prince of Germany, and it's interesting that they chose that as the location for this post-World War II conference to really decide many matters and to decide what was really going to be the fate of the nations of Europe in that particular time. The conference was held between July and August over a several-week period. It was the last of the big three meetings between Winston Churchill, the Prime Minister of Great Britain, Joseph Stalin, the dictator of the Soviet Union, and President Harry S. Truman of the United States. Truman was just in office as president for a few months. He had succeeded to the office when Franklin Roosevelt died in the previous April, unexpectedly from a hemorrhage, a stroke, while he was vacationing in Warm Springs, Georgia. And Truman now was at his very first conference on the world stage, now taking, in a sense, Roosevelt's place, but he was every bit the president of the United States. And during that conference, during those sessions, a great deal of matters were discussed. In fact, they issued a communique at the end of the conference that essentially set the parameters for Germany, the city of Berlin, East and West Germany, and much of Europe that would last for more than 50 years. In fact, some of the business was not finally settled until the mid-1990s, when the two Germanys were finally reunited, and some of the business from that 1945 conference was finally settled. It's quite interesting to note that it took all those years, all those decades, to finally settle some of the issues that were put on the table during that time. But you go into that home, and you can go into the main area, the main room where the conferences were held, the same round table that held 12 chairs is still as it was, and the chair and the flags of the three powers are there hanging over that very interesting room. And as a result of our visit there and just reflecting upon the powers that came together and represented by those three leaders, the decisions that were made, I came home and I decided to read up a little bit about it, at least in a biography that was written about Harry S. Truman. I happen to be a fellow Missourian, and he has always held a fascination and an interest for me. And so I pulled off the shelf David McCullough's fine biography of Truman, entitled Truman. And I went to the section that dealt with the Potsdam Conference. I just wanted to brush up at least on how McCullough recorded the events of that time. And it's a very fascinating read. But there was an interesting section that McCullough told about of an event that took place on Friday, July 20th, 1945, several days into the conference, when the then-President Truman invited Generals Omar Bradley and Dwight Eisenhower for lunch. And then after lunch, the two generals accompanied Truman into Berlin for a very special ceremony that was to take place. They were going to raise the flag over a section of Berlin. It was a very special flag because it was a flag that had flown over the United States Capitol on December 7th, 1941, when Pearl Harbor was attacked by the Japanese bombers. And that, of course, signaled the entry of America into World War II. That flag now was going to be flying over the vanquished capital of Nazi Germany, over Berlin, and it was going to be raised at a special ceremony on a very bright, beautiful July afternoon there, and President Truman was called upon to give and to make some remarks. I'd like to read to you exactly what Truman said as that flag was being raised, because he was called upon to make some remarks, and he actually did it without any notes, extemporaneously, it seems, as McCullough records this, on the significance of what had happened and why they were there, the big three powers at that particular conference, and of course, Truman representing the United States, and the vast might of the United States Army that had significantly helped accomplish that very day that they were there to commemorate. Let me read what Truman said. He said, "We are here today to raise the flag of victory over the capital of our greatest adversary. We must remember that we are raising it in the name of the people of the United States, who are looking forward to a better world, a peaceful world, a world in which all the people will have an opportunity to enjoy the good things of life, and not just a few at the top. Let us not forget that we are fighting for peace and for the welfare of mankind. We are not fighting for our conquest. There is not one piece of territory or one thing of a monetary nature that we want out of this war. We want peace and prosperity for the world as a whole. We want to see the time come when we can do the things in peace that we have been able to do in war. If we can put this tremendous machine of ours, which has made victory possible, to work for peace, we can look forward to the greatest age in the history of mankind. That is what we propose to do." I truly believe that in his heart, that's what he saw himself as, the commander-in-chief of the United States forces, the president of the United States, but that's exactly what he had in mind, to turn that vast machinery of war and all of its power and all the power of the American Republic into a force for good in the world, and wanted to see that accomplished out of not only that conference, but all the other efforts that would be made in that post-World War II period. As McCullough goes on in this section of his biography of Truman, he mentions that those who heard this speech that afternoon were significantly moved by what was said, that rather than just a vain patriotic display, they felt that they were hearing very simple words that expressed a declaration of faith that had sent millions of American boys into war, and Truman was able to express exactly the purpose of that effort, as few of those people could at that time. But it was a moving statement, and it touched the hearts and the minds of many of these hardened battle veterans, of politicians, reporters, and military service personnel who were there that day and heard what he said. As I read these comments, I also am moved by the simplicity of what he said, and how it very definitely expresses a desire for peace, and to turn the vast machinery of war and the efforts that it makes into an effort for peace. And that, of course, is a long dream of so many in the world, and yet it is an unrealized dream. It takes me to a section of Scripture in Isaiah chapter 2 that has still sets out the ideal for what the nations and what people are desiring to have in terms of peace, and yet has not been achieved. Let me read to you from Isaiah chapter 2, beginning in verse 2, a well-known passage. It says, "It shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains, and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow to it. Many people shall come and say, Come, and let us go to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways, and we shall walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He shall judge between the nations, and rebuke many people. They shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nations shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more." Those last few lines from verse 4, of course, have been taken and placed on a bronze statue of a man beating a sword into a plowshare there in front of the United Nations in New York City today. And of course, it represents the ideal, the hoped-for peace, but something that has not yet been achieved by any of the nations in these now more than 60 years since the conclusion of World War II. And of course, today we still wait for the realization of those words. Where I am here in my home, it's just a few hours away from the beginning of the Feast of Trumpets. The fall holy day season of God's festivals are now upon us. For those of you that understand what these days mean, I wish you certainly a very inspiring and uplifting festival season. For those of you listening to this and may not yet quite understand the significance of God's holy days, the plan and the purpose for human life that is outlined in those festivals that God gave to mankind, you might want to read our booklet, God's Holy Days, God's Holy Day Plan, and refresh yourselves or learn more about what these holy days do exactly mean. But here in a few hours, we'll begin the Feast of Trumpets. And here we will begin a period of time that points to the future when Christ returns to this earth, and these scriptures that I just read in Isaiah chapter 2 will begin to become a reality for all of the world. And the thoughts and the hopes, and the very thoughts that Harry Truman echoed and said that day in Berlin, back in 1945, will finally begin to come to pass. We have to look to God. We have to look to His purpose and plan. We have to look to the return of Jesus Christ to this earth to begin to see the day when all of these hopes and dreams will be turned into reality, when all the power and the vast might of nations will be channeled and funneled into efforts that will create peace, as outlined here in Isaiah chapter 2. For Longitude, I'm Darris McNeely. Keep listening.